I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events and the lesser told stories, ones you might not even know happened. Find History This Week on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Now we understand why Kamala Harris may not want to kill the filibuster, considering that she used it the entire night during her interview with Bret Baier. Welcome back to the show. Glad you are here today. What a busy day with the news out of Israel. Thanks for being here. 855-839-1210 on Twitter, at Rich Zeoli. The Big Story of the Hour brought to you by our buddy Dr. Mike Vanaria, VanariaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile, V-A-N-A-R-I-A, VanariaDental.com. F them forever. Comedian Andrew Schultz's show was canceled hours after his Trump interview went live. This is insane. This is absolutely insane. He was supposed to do a show at the Brooklyn Academy of Music. And the truth is that this guy is very popular. He sells out big, big venues. He's funny as hell. And ahead of the 2016 election, if you remember, Jimmy Fallon had Donald Trump on, and then he got condemned for humanizing a monster. Future Jeopardy host Ken Jennings joined other middling media personalities in further insinuating that Fallon was racist adjacent and courting white supremacists, while others called for Jimmy Fallon to be canceled outright. How unfortunately, though, for comedian Andrew Schultz, it appears that intolerance has not dissipated over the past 8 years. According to The Blaze, he revealed on Wednesday night's episode of the Flagrant podcast, a New York venue canceled what would have been his special just hours after he hosted the once and possibly future Republican president. According to Schultz, he was set to shoot his next comedy special at the Brooklyn Academy of Music shortly after his massively popular interview with Trump went live, where millions of people viewed it. The venue notified him that it was canceling the gig. It was an awesome interview and everybody loved it. And then a day later, the producer was like, oh, by the way, the venue you're going to shoot your special in canceled your shows within 3 hours. Flagrant co-host Akash Singh said after we invited him before the episode comes out, he goes to the venue. Everybody leaves on Schultz's special team. All of them have to go to the venue to check it out. I assume everything is good. So we've had these venues locked in for months now. It's not like we might do it there. It's booked. It's ready to go. We're set to go on sale this week. Had the entire production team come out for this. This is for the third time many of us are spotting the venue and looking at everything. We have the set design already curated. We're moving around seating plots, camera. It's ready to go. I don't know if it's a Trump interview, he goes on to say, but the day before it came out, we were ready to go, and we were going on sale this week, and then 3.5 hours after the Trump interview, we get this email. And here's the email that they sent him. First off, I want to thank you for thinking of BAM for Andrew Schultz's upcoming comedy show. We are always excited when promoters consider our space for their events. After some internal discussion with leadership, it was decided that the Brooklyn Academy of Music is not the right fit for this show at this time. That said, we really do appreciate you reaching out, and we'd love to work with you on future events that might be a better match for Brooklyn Academy of Music. Our door is always open for a chat about other shows you think might work well in our space. Thanks for considering us. Looking forward to potentially collaborating down the line. Now, the chair of the venue's board of trustees is a woman named Diane Max, who is the former board chair for Planned Parenthood New York City, and current Planned Parenthood Federation of America board member. And, of course, she endorsed Kamala Harris in July. F them and F them forever, added Schultz after the cancellation. Now, the venue had previously been receptive to the content plan for the special, and they said this really felt personal. After yelling MAGA, Schultz joked that while his vote was up for grabs, the board of the venue has pushed him in a particular direction. Blaze News reached out to the Brooklyn Academy of Music, but did not receive an immediate response. I mean, come on. This is the cancel culture nonsense we talk about all of the time. All of the time. God. So tired of this stuff. Guy's a comedian. Why can't he have his right, the ability to host whoever he wants on his podcast? He should be able to. It is America. Last time I checked. Well, then again, I don't even know anymore. Honestly, it's this country. It is the stuff like this that breaks my heart, though. But doesn't surprise me. This is the left is intolerant. They are intolerant people. They always have been. They always will be. That's why I don't cancel. You know what I mean? If I like a comedian, if I like an actor or show or a movie or something, and their politics are different than mine, great example. I will still watch The Big Lebowski. The Big Lebowski is one of my favorite movies. I'm disappointed that Jeff Bridges is a beta dude for Kamala. But I'm still going to watch The Big Lebowski because it's one of my favorite movies ever. I'm not going to cancel him. But they do that to us all the time. They do that to our side all the time. And it's ridiculous. And look, they have a lot of reasons to be very worried at this point. Democrats in Michigan are sounding the alarm as Kamala implodes. And it is an implosion. And they're worried now about the down ballot implications of this. The down ballot, Kamala Harris is such a drag on the ticket, she's going to bring down everybody. And this is the big story of the hour brought to you by our buddy, Dr. Mike Veneria, VeneriaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile. And mark Saturday, November 9th for his Veterans Breakfast at his Cinnaminson office in New Jersey. Saturday, November 9th, Dr. Mike Veneria, VeneriaDental.com. Here is CNN reporting out of Michigan, the woman running for United States Senate, who is probably going to lose that Senate seat, Alyssa Slotkin.
I'm concerned about all of us running.
Democrats in Michigan are running the gauntlet. As the GOP woos blue-collar voters, the war in Gaza splits the Democratic coalition, and the economy drives voter anxiety.
How nervous are you about November?
I'm very nervous.
So as she battles former GOP Congressman Mike Rogers for a key Senate seat, Congresswoman Alyssa Slotkin is sounding the alarm.
Michigan, we know what happened in 2016 when Democrats took Michigan for granted, and we went the wrong direction.
Michigan could determine control of the House and Senate, and Slotkin and Rogers are in a dead heat.
Let's elect Donald J. Trump.
Even as both candidates align themselves with the top of their tickets.
When the vice president comes, you go.
Slotkin is trying to show some separation despite backing the Biden-Harris agenda.
I'm not immediately saying, rah-rah, I'm on board.
I'm not immediately saying, rah, rah, I'm on board. The big issue in Michigan, much like Pennsylvania, comes down to the war on energy. The Democrats' war on energy is why we're here in this moment where they're going to wind up, I think, losing both states. The war on energy has come back to, well, look, it showed working class voters that they're all a bunch of kooks and they're aligned with environmental kooks over their jobs. And working class people are like, no, absolutely not. And just so you know, Tim Walz, the Midwestern goofball, the Midwestern doofus, Tampon Tim, said the Green New Deal should not be scrapped. So don't let these people fool you. They get in office, they're going to push forward their radical green agenda. No question about it. In fact, yesterday I was on a call with a bunch of energy people in New Jersey and Pennsylvania. And there was a panel, we were discussing the election. And one of the big takeaways, and these are all experts in politics and not only locally, but nationally as well. The big takeaway was if Kamala Harris somehow wins, the Democrats are going to go hardcore on the Green New Deal because they're going to think that she won despite saying she wanted to ban fracking, despite the EV mandates. They're going to go all in. In fact, the prediction is it will be a progressive nightmare in terms of what they will do to energy. It'll be an absolute freaking nightmare. Whereas if Trump wins, you're going to see the end of a lot of this nonsense. He can kill the wind turbines by executive action. Since Biden let it move forward with executive action, he can kill these EV mandates that are on the federal level, at least. He can do these things. And the Democrats will go all in. Do not believe these people for a second when they pretend like they've moderated. And Tim Walz is such a doofus, he can't help but say the quiet part out loud.
Does that mean that the Green New Deal should be scrapped?
No, look, Shannon, I think all of us, this idea of energy, we want to make sure that we're producing the energy we need. We are. We're producing more natural gas, more oil, and more renewables at any time in American history. I think the issue is making sure we have an all-of-the-above policy.
No, don't believe them. They don't want all-of-the-above because they don't want oil and they don't want natural gas. And they don't want these things. That's the bottom line. Do not believe these things. Do not believe for a second that they want an all-the-above approach. They do not. They're not. They're not. They're not. I'm telling you right now. I'm telling you right now. It is such a ruse. I'm sorry. I just got a text or something. No, it's nothing. Sorry. I didn't mean to get distracted for a moment. People text during the show sometimes, and you know, I have the attention span of a gnat. I got bumped from Fox News today because of the big news out of Israel, but I'm still a go for Saturday night, Fox News Saturday night with Jimmy Fallon. So that'll be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be a lot of fun. And I really thought, you know, for me, the idea of, as a Catholic and the Catholic voters and what Gretchen Whitmer did with that whole thing with the Eucharist and just mocking the body of Christ and that whole thing with that very bizarre kind of sexual fetish looking video she did with that podcast host. Bill McGurn was on Fox today talking about the Catholic vote and how the Democrats have just completely taken it for granted. There are a lot of Catholic voters in this country. It's just the Democrat Party doesn't seem to care about that.
The Catholic vote is very important. Kamala Harris really doesn't seem to be considering it. She has a very sort of mixed record in the Senate as Attorney General on religious things. And in Pennsylvania, Catholics are, according to last exit poll, 2020, 30% of the population. So in a state that's 1%, right, that's an important constituency.
Well, it's true. It's a very important constituency. The Democrat Party does not respect freedom of religion, though, either. And don't believe them if they pretend like they do. They don't. There's a woman who's about to go to prison. I retweeted this earlier today for praying outside of an abortion clinic because that whack job who's in charge of the DOJ's civil rights office, she's a nut and she goes after people. So Kamala Harris's DOJ is sending a black woman to prison for 3.5 years for peacefully protesting outside of an abortion clinic. The man said, "Tomorrow I will drive my wife to a federal prison in Alabama as her offense is unlawful assembly. 3.5 years in federal prison. It's called political/Christian persecution. Does life change a bit? Absolutely. Have I had dark nights? Absolutely. So many emotions, but God is good. Nonetheless, I love you forever, my love. We can ride this out, and I don't care what a media, judge, government, or jury has to say. Nothing can stop what God has put together, and the love we have is stronger than death. God will vindicate this family and our children, and their generation will know, will look and see what God has done." It's heartbreaking. It's absolutely heartbreaking. The woman is named Bevelyn Williams. Bevelyn Williams. And I really hope that Trump pardons her as soon as he gets in. She said the Biden-Harris administration is full of monsters, the ones that we thought were hiding under the bed, scared before we got in the bed, thinking they would grab our feet. They're literally in the White House, and they are ruthless. You have to go vote and get them out. She's got beautiful little daughters, two beautiful little daughters. And now their mom's going to be in jail for 3.5 years for praying outside of an abortion clinic. It's heartbreaking. Meanwhile, the cackling hens on The View think that if Trump gets elected, he'll do this to their studios.
Let me say something. I was watching interviews with MAGA supporters. They do not believe that he will do what he says he's going to do. That is what we're up against. So if you say he is going to be dictator on day one, he wants to punish with the Air Forces, whatever we have, the armed forces, he wants to punish people who disagree with him, like people like us. Okay? And they say, oh, he's not going to do that. He's going to take us out of NATO. No, he's not going to do that. So it's very hard for us to talk to these people because they refuse to believe, and I guess they're hearing it on Fox or elsewhere. All right, let's talk about fascism for a second.
Okay.
Because that came up also. I think that you covered this other part. Mm-hmm. This is the definition. It's defined as a political movement that embraces the far-right nationalism and the forceful suppression of any opposition, all overseen by an authoritarian government. That definition has Trump's picture next to it in the dictionary.
Right.
I mean, he wants to send the military to attack liberals if he gets in.
He wants to send the military to attack liberals if he gets in. Do you hear this nonsense that is peddled on daytime television by ABC? Parent company, Disney, China, ABC, Disney, China, the official name of the company. He wants to have the military kill liberals if he gets in. Use the military against liberals if he gets in. You hear this nonsense? This is what's on the airwaves during daytime television in the United States of America. And they get away with this crap. These claims, they just make this stuff up. This is going to start blowing people up in the streets.
That is basically, and the king of fascism is Mussolini, who spoke better English than he does, by the way. And so I think that to say that he's a fascist is completely accurate. I mean, it does fit the definition. He wants to send the military in to attack his opponents. I mean, what more do you really need to hear? I'm starting to worry about the polls because I see a lot of the media saying that he's leading and everybody's getting nervous and all
that's
that.
That's why they're saying it.
But they're doing that on purpose.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
It basically is so disheartening for Democrats and people who are leaning towards Kamala to say, well, what's the point? Don't buy into that.
No.
That's from Newsbusters. Why don't they talk about the woman who's about to go to prison, you know, because she prayed outside an abortion clinic? I mean, you want to talk about fascism, authoritarianism? That's your very definition of it right there. Boom, there you go. And this Office of Civil Rights, this DOJ Office of Civil Rights, are the same people that went after Mark Houck. Same thing here in Pennsylvania. Mark defeated them. This woman didn't get so lucky. But it's the exact same thing. And it's the head of this, it's Kristen Clark. She's the head of the Office of Civil Rights for the Department of Justice, and she is a radical kook. So you can sit there with these insane, absolutely insane lies about Trump, using the military and bombing their studios at The View and all the other ridiculous, ridiculous claims. But there's a mom, a black mom, who's reporting to federal prison for 3.5 years for unlawful assembly outside of an abortion clinic. You think about what people in this country did in 2020, billions of dollars worth of damage. Blowing up courthouses and police stations and Molotov cocktails, and they got a slap on the wrist. Blew up restaurants, fast food chains. Nothing happened to them. This is why people are so furious. 855-839-1210 on Twitter at Rich Zeoli. We continue along here in our fourth and final hour. Brett Baer says Kamala Harris stole time from his interview, and the awkward moment that Kamala Harris's aides shut it down. They shut it down. But first, I want to tell you about my friends at McCausland Lock Service. They are the absolute best at what they do. We talk about crime on this show all the time. It is a huge issue in America. And once again, Kamala Harris gives terrible answers to it. But you know, if you're a business person, you have to make sure that it is a priority for you. In this day and age, you have to. That's why McCausland Lock and Alarm should be your priority. Look no further than my buddy Tom McCausland and their excellent team at McCausland Lock and Alarm to secure and control access to your facilities. McCausland Lock and Alarm's access control and CCTV systems provide you top-of-the-line protection, giving you peace of mind and safeguarding your assets. You can get these systems from a lot of providers, sure, but there's only one Tom McCausland. And I trust him, and his wealth of knowledge and expertise allows McCausland to effectively protect all types of facilities, no matter what the environment. And just as important, their customer service is unmatched. When you need assistance, you talk to a local expert, probably Tom himself. You're never going to get stuck in one of those voice message systems not knowing what number to press. So if you are serious, and you should be, about protecting your facilities, you need to seriously consider McCausland Lock and Alarm. Call Tom today at 610-430-1500. 610-430-1500. McCausland Lock and Alarm. Securing your business, securing your future.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events. Major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories. The unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, joining me now, the Vice President of Americans for Prosperity, and you got to follow him on Twitter. I'm going to give you his name, Akash Chigouli, and he's on X at AkashJC. Hey, thanks for joining us here in Philadelphia. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. A bunch of stuff to chat about. I did want to mention, I was looking at your Twitter, and we talked about this on the show today as well, how CBS selectively edited out the firsthand perspective from Speaker Mike Johnson. And I saw you retweeted that. It was Mike Johnson's post. And I mean, between that and 60 Minutes doing that with Kamala Harris, it's like you almost cannot make this up.
No, you can't. But again, we know that this has been the deal for a very long time with the mainstream media, which is that conservatives just don't get a fair shake. And I think it's pretty telling with Speaker Mike Johnson, who is by all accounts a very like sort of sober, honest broker who doesn't do a lot of political bombast and just obviously felt like he didn't get a fair shake. I think he was right. But Rich, the real message here for conservatives is that we have to do this work ourselves. That's what, as you know, AFP has been doing in Pennsylvania and all across the country, knocking doors, making phone calls, delivering the conservative message. You know, the fact that we need to elect McCormick to the Senate, defeat Bob Casey, elect these conservative House candidates, fight for good policies. We've got to take that message to the American people ourselves because the media will not do it for us.
Yeah, well said. Well said. And to that end, you wrote an excellent piece at National Review. The new coalition of Republican voters still likes tax cuts. So this is great. And you say the key to building a multiracial working class party is not a Republican version of central planning popular among left wing graduate students. So two thoughts on that. Number one, just from that kind of byline there. I keep thinking of how James Carville has said the Democrat Party today has become the party of the faculty lounge and coastal elites. And I see this shift towards working class voters who are lining up behind Trump and Republicans as well. I think a lot of that has to do with the war on energy. No question about that. But you're right, though. I mean, Republicans need to embrace kind of the fundamental basics of conservatism. And that's things like cutting taxes and limited government.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And again, this is another place where Pennsylvania has kind of been the epicenter of this debate. Pennsylvania obviously has a very wide variety of voters, right? You've got kind of the upper middle class suburbs in Philadelphia. You go further west in the Commonwealth, it becomes more working class, more union based. But I think the real lesson here, Rich, is that Republicans don't need to abandon these long held principles in order to win working class voters, right? They also want economic opportunity and upward mobility. Tax cuts, deregulation, abundant energy delivers that exact agenda. I think we saw that in President Trump's first year. We've seen politicians run on that in Pennsylvania and win. Pat Toomey did it twice running for Senate in Pennsylvania. And so we know it can work politically. We know the policies work. And I think this idea that Republicans need to abandon long-held limited government principles to appeal to the working class has just proven itself to be false. And our poll shows it's not what working class voters themselves are asking for.
So working class voters, and how do we define that, first of all, Akash? Because that's really a good question when we talk about this. I mean, obviously, Kamala Harris comes from a middle class family. She grew up in a working class family. But I mean, that may mean different things to different people, right?
Yeah, I think one of the starkest divide we're seeing in a lot of ways is what's called the diploma divide, college graduates versus non-college voters. And on issue after issue, election after election, that is the dividing line. It's not race. It's not where you live. It's not what, you know, are you urban, suburban, rural, what have you. It is college versus non-college. Now, I think some of the commonly held beliefs through some of the elite class in D.C. as well, to win working class voters, you have to do class warfare and you have to do wealth redistribution and taxes and more government programs to help people. And I think that caricature of a working class voter is just false. Again, this poll showed that on taxes, they like their tax cuts. They're worried that they would be the ones ultimately paying for a corporate tax increase in the form of higher costs and lower wages. You know, they're not enamored with labor unions. They don't want handouts. They want, you know, for example, one of the things our poll showed, Rich, is that they prefer policies that grow the economy and prefer and control inflation 4-1 over doubling the child tax credit. Meaning,
wow,
in order to help families, they think economic growth does that 4-1 better than doubling the child tax credit. And so, again, I think if they're messaged the right way in an appealing way, that traditional limited government free enterprise policies can win working class voters better than class warfare and wealth redistribution can, I think that's a lesson Republicans have known for a long time and they shouldn't forget it.
Akash Jaguli is with me. He is the vice president of Americans for Prosperity. What are some other key findings there from the poll that you guys did? Because I think this is really eye opening. It's a reminder that people have realized that handouts, giveaways, these things cost money, and that's a good thing that people have realized that, because Kamala Harris's entire campaign platform is about giving more money to people. Her latest outreach now to Black voters is, you know, we'll give you things that other people can't get as well. And I think people have just said, somebody's paying for that. Come on.
Yeah, I think not only is somebody paying for it, Rich, but it's so patronizing. I mean, come on. Like, Black voters, just like Hispanic voters, just like white voters and Asian voters and what have you, they want safe streets. They want an economy that's going to grow and give them a chance to earn better wages and have their kids and themselves live the American dream. I think, for example, one of the things that we found in this poll is that the other thing they don't want is, they don't want an activist government using taxes to reward and punish favored corporations. And again, this mm-hmm. is something that has trickled into both sides politically, and it's just not the purpose of the tax code. People just want a government that does its basic functions. The idea of taxing companies to punish them for their political beliefs, again, voters disapprove of that by 4-1, almost 5-1, depending on what group you're talking about. And so, again, really simple policies. I think the other one is particularly important right now, given what Bidenomics has done to this country, is that they see the best path to reducing the deficit and controlling inflation to be spending cuts, not tax increases, spending cuts. Now, again, that's hard once you get into the specifics of what programs you're going to cut and how much. But I think starting from that base point is, again, an important lesson that people know that government spent too much. It drove the inflation crisis, and the deficits are out of control and have to stop. But that needs to be addressed on the spending side, not the tax side.
The spending side, not the tax side. And what we've seen on the spending side from this administration has just been insane. And I'm tired of people saying it had nothing to do with inflation. Of course it had something to do with inflation. Macro inflation is still on the rise. And when you're spending trillions of dollars you don't have, of course it's going to lead to inflation.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We've seen that over and over and over again. We've seen that in every country where it's ever been tried. We see that with the administration right now, where they spent, Rich, an additional $6 trillion, with a T, $6 trillion above baseline those first 2 years when it was Biden, Pelosi, Schumer controlling the federal government. And then that on top of tens of thousands of pages of regulations restricting energy, restricting labor freedom, restricting, you know, capital allocation. Tens of thousands of pages of regulation, $6 trillion in additional spending. Of course, that drove up prices, harmed our supply chain, harmed the availability of basic products. It just doesn't work. I think the one other point I would just make, the other policy that kind of falls into here that, again, both sides are unfortunately falling victim to, are tariffs, right? Mm-hmm. I think if you want to have a conversation about individualized, you know, incisive approaches to China and national security relevant industries and things like that, let's have that conversation. In some instances, tariffs are actually too weak a tool. We should have outright bans on some of that stuff when it's, you know, sort of China using technologies that could put Americans at risk. But these broad-based tariffs that are going to drive up costs for working class families, I mean, that stuff, and it, in theory, it's just to save a few thousand steel jobs in Pennsylvania and Ohio, and it doesn't even do that. It's this political sales job that the rest of us end up paying for. It's bad policy. It's bad politics. And when you talk about your Commonwealth, in particular in Pennsylvania, the decisive regions of Pennsylvania are those collar counties, the Philly suburbs. Those are people who want economic opportunity, upward mobility. They like low taxes, limited government. They don't want an activist government that feels like it's playing class warfare from either party. I think the winning formula is there for Republicans if they're willing to take it.
All right, last question for you. Corporate tax cuts. One of the things that I really liked about Trump's plan is this idea of, we'll give you a 15% corporate tax rate if you manufacture here in the United States of America. It's obviously more expensive to do business here, which is why so many companies choose to outsource, which then gets us back to the tariff argument. But if we had American manufacturing here, that would be great. Do you think that 15% corporate tax rate is a good carrot here, you know, versus a stick of a tariff, for example?
Yeah, I think it's a well-intentioned idea, but it's just very, very hard to implement that. So, for example, one of the tariff regimes that the Biden administration just put in place, which there were 27,000 requests for exemptions to the tariff. That's what ends up happening with policies like that. I think with a selective corporate tax rate, you'd see the exact same thing. You'd see lobbying for different exemptions, carve-outs, and, you know, interpreting the law differently. And so I think the business environment in this country has a lot more that it affects it other than just taxes. I think a low corporate tax rate for all American businesses that doesn't pick winners and losers, a fair regulatory environment, abundant energy, getting unions out of the way. I think we can build an economy that is attractive to invest and create jobs here in this country. I think the other thing that we can absolutely do, Rich, is take business out of China, not by tariffs and by attacking necessarily, but by showing how unreliable of a business partner China is. And whether it moves to Southeast Asia or Mexico or back to the United States, it doesn't make sense to build every single thing here in the U.S., but we have to be strategic about our trade deals with free countries and making America an attractive place to do business. I think we can do all that without having government get bigger, more confusing, and more involved in picking winners and losers.
Akash Chikuli, thank you so much for joining us here in Philadelphia. I appreciate it very, very much. Americans for Prosperity, keep up the good fight, because I think these are very, very important issues and they're great issues to have conversations about. So thanks for joining us. We'll post a link to your article at National Review, and all the best.
Thanks, Rich. Appreciate you having me on.
You bet. And as we continue along here, our fourth and final hour on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD, I just want to mention the big story of the day brought to you by our buddy, Dr. Mike Vanaria, VanariaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile, V-A-N-A-R-I-A, VanariaDental.com. I wanted to make a point, though, on the tariffs, because this video is excellent. It's been making the rounds today about how Trump would use tariffs. And it's from CNBC this morning. This is what I've been saying. We're going to have, if Trump wins, we're going to have lots of debate over these things. This is right now a campaign message that he's delivering to voters, and it's working because voters, working class voters, like to hear this stuff. Get him in there. We can work on the details of all these things. But this is a great understanding of how Trump would use tariffs going forward. And I think that this is a good way to and kind of encapsulate the previous conversation as well. This is from today on CNBC.
When you talk to the president, former president, about tariffs, do you see it as a bargaining chip, or do you think you're going to see tariffs across the board of 20%?
I think we should put tariffs on stuff we make and not put tariffs on stuff we don't make. It's pretty simple. And of course, it's a bargaining chip. We can't sell a Ford or GM in Europe. You go to Europe, you can't sell a Ford or GM. Why? There's 100% tariffs. How about in Japan? 100% tariffs. So do you think if we said we're going to tariff you the way you tariff us, do you think they're going to allow Mercedes and all these Japanese companies and Porsches and BMWs to all of a sudden have 100% tariffs in America? Of course not. They're going to come and negotiate, and their tariffs are going to come down. And finally, Ford and General Motors are going to be able to sell in these places.
How's that sound?
Of course they're going to come down. Of course. This is just negotiating.
It absolutely makes sense. If you do it strategically, if it's across the board, it creates a real problem. And the question is whether you believe the president is going to do it strategically or across the board. He keeps saying it across the board.
Well, when you're running for office, you make broad statements so people understand you.
Right.
Okay? Tariffs are an amazing tool by the president to use. They're an amazing tool, but he understands, don't tariff stuff we don't make. Right? If we don't make it and you want to buy it, I don't want to put the price up. It's pointless, but use tariffs to build in America. If we want to make it in America, tariff it, or if we're competing with a tariff it. But you got to remember, we need to protect the American worker. Finally, someone's going to protect the American worker, and Donald Trump is here to protect the American worker.
Do you think we make a lot of money in tariffs, or if they're used as negotiating tactics? Look, tariffs will come down there. We're not going to have super high tariffs here either. There's not going to be a big pot of money at the end of the day.
I probably should have said his name at the beginning. This is Howard Lutnick, who is the Trump Vance transition co-chair. He is the chairman and CEO of Cantor Fitzgerald. And so I think his point on this is correct. This is a strategic tool to use. And I think that is what a lot of us miss when we are having the conversation about tariffs. Let's keep going.
I love that story. So which is it? Do we make a lot of money on tariffs, or we bring productivity here and we drive up our workers here? So it's a win-win scenario. I like both of them. I think what's going to happen is we'll make a bunch of money on the tariffs, but mostly because everybody else is going to negotiate with us and we will be more fair. In 1948, right, we came up with something called the Marshall Plan, right? The world, Germany and Japan were destroyed after World War II, and we wanted to export our economy to them. So we made a rule. They could tariff us, and we won't tariff them. So they can rebuild.
That's the best explanation I've heard of.
So they can rebuild their economy. We rebuilt their economy using something called the Marshall Plan. Yeah. Our economy is so awesome that we'll use it to help you rebuild. When should that have ended? What do you think, 1980? Right? 1985? I mean, why 40 years are Japan and Germany and all of Europe still tariffing the heck out of our auto industry, tariffing the heck out of our furniture industry? Do you realize all your furniture you're buying that's made foreign? It seems crazy. Why? It's because they tariff us and we don't tariff them. It's so obvious.
I should mention, tweeted out by the Trump War Room. This is the best explanation I've heard, because that's what you heard that woman on the show say. Trump transition chair Howard Lutnick offers how President Trump will use tariffs to protect the American worker. All right, a lot more to go here on our fourth and final hour on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD. Don't go away.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
The moment when Kamala Harris's handlers threw in the towel and cried, "Uncle, uncle," as she tried to eat up the clock on the Bret Baier interview last night. Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here. Don't forget, December 20th, we'll be live at the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey, our next live show. And tomorrow's Friday, so we're 2 months away. But make your reservation now so you can join us. And a programming note, Saturday night, I will be on Fox News Saturday night with Jimmy Failla, 10 p.m. on the Fox News channel. So please join us for that. It's going to be a lot of fun. My buddy Brianna Lyman's going to be on the show, too. So I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be a good time. Always a good time on that show. We laugh. We have a good time. Fun stuff. A couple things from Bret Baier's interview I wanted to mention. She tried eating up the clock last night in a big, big way. She tried eating up the clock. They ultimately threw in the towel and surrendered. But this is interesting. How they tried to eat up the clock before the interview even started.
You know, when the kicker in football, they call a timeout right before he's going to kick the field goal. They're icing the kicker. So we were supposed to start at 5 p.m. This was the time they gave us. Originally, we were going to do 25 or 30 minutes. They came in and said, well, maybe 20. So it was already getting whittled down. And then the vice president showed up about 5:15. We were pushing the envelope to be able to turn it around for the top of the 6 o'clock. So that's how it started. And I could tell when we started talking that she was going to be tough to redirect without me trying to interrupt. I did this with President Obama. At one point, I just said, Mr. President, I know you like the filibuster. I just didn't even have the chance to sometimes redirect in those ways. I had a lot of other questions.
She ate up the clock. And then ultimately they came in and then, mercy, mercy.
Madam Vice President, and they're giving me a hard rap here.
They're giving me a hard rap here, Madam Vice President.
Thank you for the time.
I gotta go.
Thank you.
Hard rap, Madam Vice President. I got it. It's uncle, surrender, uncle, uncle. Of course, the big news of the day today is Israel and Netanyahu today saying this is an opportunity to create a new future. This is a big deal. This very successful mission by Israel to kill the top guy in Hamas. It's a big deal. And this is another area, again, where I think the left has lost it and they are just fumbling here and they just don't know how to handle things. They don't understand how many people in this country stand with Israel. They just don't get it. Or they're just so terrified of those voters in Michigan, like I mentioned. You know, the extreme hard lefties in Michigan who hate the Jews. But it's a big deal today that Israel was able to accomplish this. And we talked about this. They killed the Hamas leader and the October 7th mastermind. And it may have been completely by chance. This Hamas chief Sinwar, who Israeli officials believe may have been the was in fact the mastermind of October 7th, killed in this airstrike on Thursday. And you heard my conversation with Dr. Victoria Coates about it earlier. But war was never going to end without his death. May his nihilistic fanaticism die with him. That's what Douglas Murray said about this. May his nihilistic fanaticism die with him. There was cautious celebration as the news broke that Hamas leader Sinwar had been killed in Gaza. The mastermind of October 7th was, among some competition, the most fanatical leader in Hamas. In 2011, he was the most high level of 1,027 Palestinian terrorists released from Israeli prisons in exchange for one kidnapped Israeli soldier. His release caused huge controversy in Israel. Time would show why. Once back in Gaza, he became notorious for his psychopathic violence directed against Palestinians as well as Israelis. In 2016, he was involved in the torture and murder of Hamas's own Mahmoud Ishtiwi, who Sinwar accused of homosexuality. It's funny, as all these pro-Palestinian, pro-Hamas lunatics on college campuses out there protesting. They tortured and killed a guy because he was gay, or accused of being gay. He was always the fanatic's fanatic. In 2018, he gave an address to the citizens of Gaza in which he said, "We'll take down the border with Israel and tear out their hearts from their bodies." On October 7th last year, he made his words a reality. For many Israelis, the killing of Sinwar was always the most important signal that the war against Hamas in Gaza could be over. Over the past year, the group's ability to fire rockets into Israel had already been almost totally degraded. In the last 12 months of fighting, Hamas had already lost almost all of its senior commanders. But as long as Sinwar lived, there could be no closure for the Israeli public. There are several immediate questions that will now be on people's minds. For the past year, Sinwar has been believed to have surrounded himself in the tunnels of Gaza with some of the Israeli hostages stolen from their homes on the 7th. Are they still alive? And if so, where are they? It is possible that Sinwar long ago lost track of which hostages were there as Hamas and other Palestinian terrorist groups spread them around Gaza. Or perhaps he did, as was long believed, keep what he would have seen as the most valuable hostages, women and children, close around him. His fanaticism may well have been one of the most important forces to have stopped an earlier end to the war and a deal to hand over the remaining hostages. Sinwar knew that he would not live if all the hostages were released. And he didn't care about any civilian casualties. He considered them to be necessary sacrifices. For all the people out there calling Bibi Netanyahu a monster, and this guy had no problem with civilians dying. They were a necessary sacrifice. What the fate of the remaining hostages is will hopefully become clearer in the coming days, perhaps now that Hamas's leadership is almost completely destroyed. Maybe there'll be the kind of chaos that has broken out in Hezbollah since its leadership was also destroyed in recent weeks. The chaos could lead to further killing. Or it could lead to people realizing that there is nothing now worth fighting for and that it is finally time for Hamas to call this war to a close. It is known that Sinwar was a major block to any discussion, even a post-war planning of Gaza. He had let it be known in the tunnels that he thought it shameful and outrageous that some Palestinian factions were engaging in talks last December about post-war reconstruction. And now that guy is dead with his fanaticism along with it. Maybe there'll be some peace. Maybe there'll be a positive development in peace in the Middle East before absolute World War III breaks out. Because I think people are very, very worried, and rightfully so, very worried about what could happen in this country. Very worried about what could occur in the world, not just this country, but in the world, and what that the effects of that could be for the United States of America. No doubt about it. Oh, and before I get out of here, do you know that the New York Post hired a professional lip reader to decipher what Obama and Biden were talking about at Ethel Kennedy's funeral last night? Obama said, "She's not as strong as me." Biden said, "That's true." This is amazing. They hired a professional lip reader. Obama said, "She's not as strong as me." Biden said, "That's true." That's hilarious. That is hilarious. President Biden griped to former President Barack Obama that she is not as strong as me, with Obama agreeing, "That's true," in a stunning off-mic conversation deciphered for the Post by a professional lip reader. Oh, man. That's it. Good night, everybody. Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla is up next. Have a wonderful rest of your night. Keep the conversation going on X at Rich Zeoli. Thank you.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events and the lesser told stories, ones you might not even know happened. Find History This Week on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.